You're listening to the RedCafe.net podcast. Welcome to the RedCafe.net podcast. You can email us at podcast@redcafe.net or alternatively, post your opinion on the RedCafe.net forums.
Well, hello and welcome to episode 80 of the RedCafe.net podcast. It's me, Stephen Darwin, and back to our full complement this week. It's Dan and Dov joining me. How are you doing, guys? Good week?
A very good week. I apologise for not being here last week.
I was going to say, who's that strange voice coming from
there? That's strange voice.
It's ridiculous.
It is, I know. It'd be funny, it'd be good to see the appearance rating of our...
skyrocketed, Dad.
We need to find this out. We need to listen back to every single episode and see who was present. No, I had other commitments that I'd forgotten about and then realised it was a night out, so I couldn't really turn it down. But I'm back now after a successful evening yesterday at Old Trafford. Yeah, so very happy.
Need a strong performance from you on the pod if you're going to keep the place.
I've heard you've been bringing some squad players in and stuff, so I need to just be on the ball. I'm the Darren Gibson of the podcast.
How you doing, Duff?
Yeah, no, I'm good. If he's a Darren Gibson of the podcast, does that make me, what, the nanny or something like that? Steve, you could be... Who's always reliable? Ryan Giggs, he's always reliable.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, I'll take that.
Yeah, no, very well. Watch your football as usual, Steve. Eating too much pizza and enjoying the sunny weather. So, not too much happening. I've not been on any nights out, so I'm fresh and ready to go as always.
That's all you seem to do, Dov. Watch football and eat pizza. It must be that's the life.
It's not, honestly, like that is the order to watch football all weekend. And then Champions League during the week and eat in the middle. And, yeah.
It's not bad. Not bad. Quality. Right then, guys. Well, we'll get started by looking at the most recent game for United, which was, of course, the 4-1 win over Schalke, which confirmed our place in the final of the Champions League at Wembley against Barcelona, of course. Yeah, Dan, it was a comfortable win in the end. Two goals for Anderson as well. Do you think that's earned him a place in the team for the final?
No. I don't think he'll play in the final. I think the interesting thing is, obviously we played them in 2009. The game was slightly different then, but Anderson started that game, didn't he? I don't think he played very well. I know that was 2 years ago, and he's obviously improved a little bit since then, but I think that it'll be too risky to play him in a second final. Well, it'll be his third final, won't it, actually? I thought he played very well yesterday, actually. Apart from his goals, I thought that he ran the midfield, really, and he seemed to be given a bit more of an attacking role, where he wasn't, you know, on the edge of his own box as much. He was more, centre circle onwards, and I thought he played really well. He got up and attacked a lot more, got in support of Berbatov, and I thought that he was fantastic, really. In fact, I thought the whole team was good. John O'Shea had a solid performance as captain. At left back, and then obviously Johnny Evans coming back in and Smalling as well. Seeing they've only played with each other, what, maybe five times tops this season, I thought they defended really well. It's all round good performance, really. I think the only player that didn't light up Old Trafford was possibly Nani, but even that, he set up the second goal, didn't he? Was it the third goal? Sorry, Anderson's first goal. So, good times for United, and they're surely now confident going into the Chelsea game.
Dan, I'm gonna stitch you up slightly here.
Oh, well, go on.
Dov, there was more than a few eyebrows raised at the team before kickoff, and this is Dan's text.
Well,
he says, "If we go out tonight, Fergie is a joke. What sort of team is this?"
So, I think he was just annoyed that he was at the game and he wasn't getting to see a full compliment, maybe. Maybe that's what it was.
That's what it was, though. Thanks for that. You know, it's just, I think that, you know, when you look back, I mean, I was walking back to the car after the game and I was thinking, you know, we've just beat Schalke, all right, they're not a brilliant team, but it's the semi-final of the Champions League and we've put out half a team and still walked it 4-1. And you're thinking to yourself, well, that's either means Schalke are very, very poor or United have got good, you know, depth in the squad. Like, you know, we mentioned before, like, the players like Evans who haven't played much this season, Smalling's been in and out, Gibson's been a bit bad player, and you've had Anderson who's been injured for a lot of the season. And it's just Valencia, of course, and Berbatov's not played recently. And to win a game 4-1, and the type of performance that we put in as well, I'll admit I was nervous before the game because I thought, you know, if Schalke get a goal here, first 20 minutes, we're going to worry because we're not getting any much experience on the field apart from, you know, Scholes and Van der Sar and O'Shea. You know, they're the ones that are obviously going to be the older heads. But no, I was worried at the beginning, I must admit, I was worried. But
you weren't the only one, to be fair. When I was on Twitter just before, well, when the team was announced, and there was quite a few sort of United people I'm following on there that were sort of saying, this is looking a bit worrying with the team, especially the centre-half partnership, like you mentioned there, Smalling and Evans.
As well, Steve, you think, like, obviously Raul, like we mentioned off air, you know, he's a Champions League legend, and yet he's playing against Johnny Evans and Smalling. He'd hardly got a kick all game. You think that these must be really good players that we've got, but maybe we don't appreciate them as much as what we should do, but we're doing fantastically well this season, and obviously the last few seasons in the Champions League, we've been flying through them, so you can't really argue against Sergin. And like Dov said before, you know, we seem to have found that blend of youth and experience matched with how to play in Europe, and it's suited us right down to the ground.
You mentioned Evans as well there. I mean, considering I think he'll probably admit it himself, he's not had a great season. He's had, well, been the brunt of quite a lot of criticism from us on the pod and from most United fans as well. So to have played as well as he did, because I thought he was one of the standout performers, really, that will do him the world of good. And Dov, Valencia as well, Antonio Valencia in top form again. And, well, you're talking about selection headaches for Ferguson for the final. Who does he play on the wing?
I think I'm going to take you up on John Evans first. I disagree with you thinking he had a good game. I thought he looked a bit shaky at times. Still a wee bit nervous as well, and he was caught out of position on a couple of occasions, so he's getting better, but I don't think he was as comfortable as I'd like. But like I say, Valencia, I thought Valencia was fantastic. Him and Anderson completely, for me, ran the show. And the way he hugs that touchline, I watched him for a little bit, just to keep my eyes on him. And every time we had the ball, he was just as wide as he could get.
I love that phrase, hugging the touchline.
It's great.
Hugging the touchline, I think. Like when you see a player dropping his shoulder, you know, it's funny. But sorry, Dov, I interjected and I apologise.
Valencia hugging the touchline was great to see it.
Getting chalk on his boots would be more factual, I think. Factual, even. Factful.
Well, no, I like hugging the touchline. It's better. It's warmer.
Okay.
so I think if you watched them, he was out there getting chalk on his boots as well and just sort of stretching the game.
Right, is it chalk anymore? It's paint. It's not chalk. It's a paint.
All right, so right, Danny, you've got to decide what it is. Is it chalk? Is it paint? Is it sellotape? I mean, Jesus Christ.
As well, you know, when a player hits the post or whatever, they always say it's off the woodwork. I don't think they made of wood anymore.
A lot of things he's been he's back. Dan's back.
He's got all this disease. He's been holding it in all week. But to answer your question, Steve, I'll do it quick. Valencia, you should play Valencia on the right wing.
Okay. Can I point out as well on Paul Scholes? I thought he was fantastic last night.
Yeah, he was.
Passing in the first half. He did two passes exactly the same. Like same areas of the pitch, straight from left to right to Valencia. Just dropped it over the fullback. And it was just, it's amazing how he can just find that accuracy. He literally took one touch and just pinged it.
Makes like a 60, 70 yard pass look like he's passing it from 2 centimetres away. It's incredible.
Yeah. When he makes a bad pass, it's like everyone, like, it's like, oh my God, Scholes has just give the ball away. And it's such a good player. It's such a shame he's obviously getting on with it.
But he's not really worried that he's maybe going to get sent off because there's a couple of tasty challenges we thought, wait a minute. He's on a yellow card. He's going to like get another one and get sent off and miss the final. So it's getting me worried.
Did he get booked in this game, or was it one beforehand?
No, I'm sure he got booked in this game.
Yeah, I couldn't remember seeing that booking, that's all. But someone behind me said, oh, he's got to be careful or else he gets sent off, so...
So you were too busy chatting up the girl in front of you and watching the crazy...
Yeah, be careful, we're not moving since this podcast off, right? It wasn't... just to clear things up, this girl was her boyfriend. You know, it was obviously the first time here, and I was, you know, commenting on... Well, the boyfriend was commenting on Van der Sar, so I just said, I just interjected with the facts, and that was it. That's all I did. she wasn't a looker, to be fair, though. She wasn't a looker.
In fact, she isn't listening.
I had to squeeze into my seat because she was a bit chunky on the side of the
Dear. We'll move it on there, shall we, Dan? Get you out of this hole that you've dug for yourself.
Shall I give you my seat number, so she's listening, she knows.
Oh dear. Anyway, good to see Darren Fletcher back after a couple of months out. Can't really gauge too much from that performance, but if he does get himself fit, I'm sure he'll be in the reckoning for a place in the final. We keep going to this Champions League final team. I might have to ask you both to suggest who you'd pick in a minute. But no, Barcelona, Dov, how'd you go about beating them then in the final?
Quick tempo, very, very fast game. I was thinking about this today. I was thinking, right, okay. If you try and play a passing game against Barcelona, you'll get beat. And then thinking the way that Jose Mourinho's set up against them as well, he's four at the back and then set up a solid midfield. So I would go with three in the middle as well. I was listening to another podcast and they were talking about the size of the squad they've got. And they've got like 27, the complete first team squad's 27 players. Six of them are out on loan. And then another six or seven are kind of sort of youngsters, sort of youth-type players, and got another three or four injured. So I think they're working maybe with like 15, 16 players, which is a pretty small team. And a lot of the players have played for Spain, so they basically played constantly for the last two or three years without a break. So I think the way that Fergie's kind of rotated all season and kept the squad fresh, for example, playing a second string against Schalke, that if we go in there and play a very, very intense game for 90 minutes with five in the middle, then I think we've got the players to do it. That's being the tactical mastermind that I am, that's how I would play it.
See, I mean, I was listening on the way back from the football yesterday. I was listening to Five Live, it was, and Steve McClaren was on there, and we were having a discussion about how they might play against Barcelona, and they were mentioning Dani Alves possibly being a weak link in terms of, you know, defensively, obviously going forward, he's very good. He's more of a right winger, though, isn't he, than a right back? And they were discussing whether they would play Nani on the left-hand side to get in behind Alves, or whether they'd play Park to counteract Alves going forward. Obviously, if they played Park, then the striker then has got to move over to the left and fill in where Dani Alves was, or so, and run at the back, well, run at Puyol or Piqué, and it was quite interesting really to hear what a football manager would actually do there. It's quite a tricky one, really, because I think Valencia deserves to start on the right. I think it gives us something a bit different. I mean, Nani's a great player, but he's all tricks and flicks, isn't he? Whereas Valencia, he'll just literally get the ball, and I'm assuming it'll be Abidal who plays in the final. I imagine he'll get fit again. And I think he'll just run him down to the byline and just whip some crosses in, and I think that, you know, Puyol's a very good player, as is Piqué, but I don't think both of them are very fast these days, especially Puyol. So I think if we played Hernandez, you know, with Rooney just behind him, I think we'd get a little bit of joy, because I thought in the 2009 final, I thought we were a bit slow to get forward and support our striker. So maybe that's something that Fergie will have to look at, but it's just a scary thought, really, because you know that Barcelona are going to have, you know, 60% of the ball.
Is there any way of stopping that? Is there any way you can stop their one-touch, sort of quick-flowing passing, Xavi and Iniesta just run the show? Is there any way to get amongst them and just stop them doing that? Can it be done?
Of course it can.
It can be done if you want to stop them playing, but then when we get the ball back, we've got to have options going forward, otherwise it's pointless winning the ball back, isn't it? You know, there's no point in us winning the ball. Like, I mean, Real Madrid played against Barcelona the other day and they had Diarra in midfield, didn't they? And they had Pepe. And they have Kadir in the middle as well. And they all won the ball. But then when they got the ball, they had, you know, Ronaldo struggled to get the ball because obviously the passing ability is not there.
So it's the thing very, for it's me very, is,
I mean, people were saying, you know, we're going to have to play gigs in the middle with Carrick and Park, maybe. But then you're thinking to yourself, well, all right, they've got to be built on the ball then when they get the ball back. But is Giggs going to be able to chase around in midfield, you know, after Iniesta or Xavi? I'm not sure he is. And we saw on Sunday in the Arsenal game, you know, Park, when he played in the middle, he didn't track his runner, and that's how we let the goal in. So if Barcelona do that too, I think we're in trouble. It's tricky. That's why I'm not a football manager, I don't know. There's so many different... do you think Guardiola and Barcelona are worrying about us, though? Or do you just think they're going to go out and play their game and then just think they'll beat us? I don't know. But what are they going to be worried about from us, though? This is what I mean. Are we going to turn it into, like, Barcelona worried more about us than what we're worried about them?
I don't think Barcelona worry about anyone, to be honest. I mean, potentially if we were playing, I don't know, Real Madrid... in the Champions League semi-final, say, I mean, we'd all be pretty worried about it, surely. But Barcelona just seem to, well, they just seem to be a cut above, to be honest. And I don't know, I just find it, I was saying to you off air that I go into this final not expecting to win. I really don't. And I think if we do win, it'll be a pretty monumental achievement, to be honest, because I class them as, well, you hear it all the time about them being the best team ever. I mean, they're definitely the best team I've seen in my generation anyway.
I mean, the thing is about Barcelona, they are beatable, but it's the only problem is it's stopping them creating as many chances. Because, you know, say if they create 10 chances against the final, they're going to put away one of them, aren't they? Whereas I think we are not going to create as much against them. So if we have two chances, I think we're going to have to score one of them.
Hernandez should play.
I think Hernandez should play because he gives us something different. I mean, it's no slight of Berbatov, but obviously Hernandez is a bit sharper. He gets in behind players, and that's where I think we can capitalise. Because did Berbatov start the 2009 final? I think he did, didn't he, up front? Oh, I can't remember who started. But anyway, whoever it was, they kept on playing in front of the centre-halves and not getting in behind them. It means that Barcelona can defend, as you say, you know, in front of them. But, you know, with Hernandez and Rooney especially, I think they'll if they play up front, I think they'll be able to get in behind. And if it has to be a long ball over the top, then I don't care. Stick it in the net. Adopt tactics for a game and see what happens.
Just to answer your question as well, Dan, Berbatov came off the bench on the 2008 Champions League final. I couldn't remember.
Who tonight then, Tevez?
Ronaldo, Rooney, Park, Giggs, Carrick, Anderson, Evra, Vidic, Ferdinand, John O'Shea and Van der Sar.
So
apart from Ronaldo, you could play more. You could play the same side. Get Manu instead. Hernandez.
Mm. Yeah, but I mean, I just don't know how he's gonna. I mean, as well at right back, who do you put? Do you play Raphael or do you play John O'Shea?
I'd go Raphael personally, just because of the pace aspect.
Well, David Villa will be up against him as well, won't it? But they're also saying that on the radio last night. You know, how the fact that because Villa comes inside a lot, we can probably get. What if we have an attacking fullback who can get past Villa and straight at the left back? You know, if you can double up on Navidal and pull Xavi out the middle, then there's more space. But this is in a perfect world. And
You're listening to the RedCafe.net podcast.
We got an email from Eddie Dulat from Los Angeles. He's just given his ideas on how you stop Barcelona. He says, firstly, we've got to score first. He put that in capital letters. That's one of the main things, scoring first. He thinks you have to stick two players on Messi and sort of shadow him all game.
Yeah, you can't do that.
He says that,
stick two players on Messi and you just leave everybody else open. So, no, I don't agree with that.
He says he wouldn't play Berbatov, so don't start with Dimitar Berbatov. And he'd start with Rooney in behind Hernandez, which I'd probably agree. Definitely go with that.
Yeah. I actually agree with his first point about scoring first, because when Barcelona score first, you're not going to get the ball off, are you? Which is that was probably the problem in 2009, actually, because we started that game really well, and then they scored that goal for Meto, and then it just completely changed. We didn't get the ball off at all.
So you mentioned you don't agree with putting two on Messi. I mean, is there a way you can stop Messi?
Players would you put on Messi? Because then I don't think we've got any players who'd be able to do that. Fletcher, maybe.
Fletcher,
yeah,
he'd be the only one. I think
Messi's too good for. He'll, without being disrespectful to Darren Fletcher, he'll walk all over him.
It's not even that. It's Fergie doesn't. He's never played a man marker. He doesn't care. We're Manchester United. We should be man marking other players.
He did it once. Like he played Phil Neville on somebody. I can't remember who it was. It's not the point. It doesn't matter. We're not going to do that because then you just you might as well play with 10 men if you're just going to have one person running around. I don't agree with it. What they were saying on to take another thing from the radio. They were saying, you know, how Barcelona don't really play with an out and out striker. So in the 2009 game, what we found were that Ferdinand and Vidic, they weren't marking anybody because Eto'o was playing on the right, wasn't he? Messi was just dropping deep and they had whoever else on the left. And was it Henry on the left, yeah? And so nobody was actually playing up front.
Yeah, that's so you've got watching the classic.
So then what do your defenders do? Do they push out or do they hold back or do they leave Messi to the midfielders or and what Steve McLaren suggested was he said he saw the Arsenal game against Barcelona. What they did, they put Koscielny, as soon as like Messi got within sort of 25 yards of the goal, Koscielny would push out and engage with him and leave one man spare at the back to cover.
Maybe that's what you need to do with Rio then, because like you say, watching
the Rio, Vidic can't go out and clatter. He'll just
watching El Clasico the sort of semi final the other day, the second leg. You're spot on there with what you say about like how they don't play with that out and out striker. I mean, Messi pops up all over the pitch, doesn't he? And you've got Villa, who predominantly stays on the left, Pedro on the right, and Messi's just got like that free roll, and he'll just pop up in pockets of space all around the box. So that could be a good sort of tactic to employ. Just get Rio as soon as Messi picks it up outside the box, just sort of push up and try and get to him early, and then Vidic.
But then I imagine then your fullbacks would have to tuck in, though, wouldn't they?
Mm.
I'm quite happy if Barcelona get the ball wide and want to cross the ball in. I'm quite happy with that. I think that Ferdinand and Vidic should be able to deal with that.
Yeah,
they should be able to. It's you know against someone Messi who's like 4'1" or something. Then, Pedro's not the biggest lad, is he? So
and Messi, he did score of a header against us in the final.
He did, yes, but I think that was a very good header actually, but.
We'd given up by then, really. I think the game was finished when they scored in 2009. Like after 5 minutes after that, you just see we were never.
Because O'Shea didn't quite track him. I think he couldn't be bothered getting back in, really. but can I just make a comparison? Darren Gibson and Iniesta. Hear me out. In the Barca semi-final, that ball from was it Iniesta who played it through to Pedro?
It was nowhere near the same class as that, Dan.
Gibson's was brilliant, I know.
It was an easy ball, to be honest. The space was wide open and all you had to do was...
You've got to measure that ball perfectly.
No way, I'm not having that. Not having that at all.
Not having that either.
Before I saw Iniesta play that ball, Pedro, he was on his own anyway, all right, I admit.
He had a crowd of players in between. Messi was there.
No, I don't believe you. No way.
You watch it again.
Pedro runs off the left back and he's on his own. Pedro was a great first touch and finish. I'll give you that. That was fantastic. On a wet, greasy surface as well.
Anyway, I think we need to leave it there with Barcelona. We've been.
I bet Gibson scored more goals this season than Iniesta. Maybe it was that. He must have scored a few, though.
What have you done with Dan? Where's he went?
Yeah, I like that. I like Gibson. You know, I do. I just think he's very unfairly treated.
Well, you should get himself back on Twitter then. That's what you should do. We can all tell him what we think.
I can't believe it. That was ridiculous when I heard that, though. What was it, 97 minutes or something? And he closed his account. There was rumours that it was Ferguson just using different usernames.
Anyway, I'm sure we'll come back to this sort of debate. Not the Gibson Iniesta one, because that's Anyway, yeah, we'll come back to the final discussing that closer to the date, which I believe is May 28th. Is that right? Saturday.
Yep.
May 28th. Good stuff. Well, we'll briefly then move on to just discuss the defeat to Arsenal 1-0 in the Premier League on Sunday. Dov, any sort of thoughts as to what went wrong other than Park, well, failing to track Ramsey for the goal?
I think, well, like, fair enough that they did fail to track it back, but I think we kind of looked to be a bit lackluster in general anyway. It seemed like, I don't know if it was tiredness or Arsenal were a bit more, I said that last week, I thought we'd get beat, but just because of the Arsenal, no pressure on them. They play better when they've got when there's no pressure on them, and they did. They were quite fantastic. Aaron Ramsey, who scored the goal, I thought was good, and they worked well with Wilshere in the middle as well. I think it was just one of those games that we weren't like amazingly bad, but like really, really bad. But I just think Arsenal were a wee bit better on the day, and it was only one goal. But I just think that the significance that one goal and what it means for the upcoming game, which we'll speak about as well, it's getting me a wee bit worried, if I'm going to be honest. I thought Vidic was how the linesman did not see Vidic handball.
To be fair, though, me and Steve watched it in the same pub, and I didn't see the handball first time. I thought,
really?
Yeah, I thought Van Persie headed it. Why? Because I knew Vidic hadn't headed it because it was past him, but I didn't see Vidic's hand.
Yeah,
and Van Persie went mental, didn't he? Vidic, he's playing a risky game there. Obviously, I mean, if he gets sent off there, he misses the Chelsea game, misses Blackburn, and he misses Blackpool. You know, three games which are going to define our season.
It's not the first time he's done it either. That's the thing.
No, he does stupid things. He did it against Liverpool when he just kicks people and pulls people down. He seems to like make these split second. He's a great defender, but I think sometimes he can just lose what he's doing, sort of thing.
Yeah, just to sort of back up what Dan's saying there, the camera angle we had, sort of Vidic, his back was like turned towards the camera, so it did look like you couldn't really see that his arm had gone up. I'm not sure. Well, obviously the linesman would have had a similar sort of view to what we had, so I think it would have been a difficult one for him to see straight away. But when you see Van Persie's reaction, then surely, as a referee, you must have known that something happened. But yeah, we got away with that one, but then you could say Michael Owen at the other end towards the end.
I said at half-time, I said, if the referee knows he's made a bit of an error, if we get a chance to get a penalty, unless it's absolute, you know, absolute stonewall, he won't give it. But I thought that was a stonewall penalty. I thought he put his leg down the back of his leg, you know.
Yeah.
If he's in there, Owen, he's in, one-on-one. You know, I fancy him to put it away, but not to be. It was a poor performance all around, really. I thought we were terrible, really. I mean, we didn't do anything first half. It looked like they were going to win 2-3-0. Second half, we came back into it a bit more, but I only thought, you know, once they scored their goal, that's when we started to attack.
Do you think if we'd had to win that game to sort of make sure we were still on course? And I know, well, we're not secure or anything at the moment. Obviously, massive game on Sunday against Chelsea. But do you think if we'd needed to desperately win that game, we'd have maybe been a different approach and maybe been up for it?
Yeah, but essentially, if we'd have beat Arsenal, though, Steve, we could have virtually won the league. You know what I mean? It gives us an extra gap over Chelsea. And I thought the Arsenal game away was easier than the Chelsea game at home to win.
Given that we've dropped 2 points at home all season, undefeated at home, but our away form has been terrible. The away form
it's just one team in the league that can beat us at home. Or it's Chelsea, isn't it? Let's be honest, it is.
I just think because there's so much riding on it it's like goal difference is exactly the same. If Chelsea win, that would take them above us. If we win, it's pretty much, well, touch wood, if we can get a decent result against Blackburn, we should be able to comfortably beat Blackpool on the last day. So it could be a case of winner takes all. So I see what Dan's saying in terms of it being so much riding on it, and Chelsea will just be completely up for it, you'd expect. So.
You're listening to the redcafe.net podcast.
Right then, guys. Well, before we move on to player and cabbage of the week, we just got one more email from Trevor from Cheshire. He's talking about Carrick and Scholes and how he's noticed that they just simply can't play together. He thinks one of the reasons could be that Carrick's just sort of maybe intimidated by him slightly. He picks out the Manchester City game as sort of being a good example of it, that he didn't play well in that, obviously, Carrick. And then against Schalke in the first leg, obviously Carrick was superb. But then he thinks when Scholes came on, he was maybe not as effective. So do you think there's anything in that at all?
No, not really. I think that they're both very good players. I don't see why they...
Maybe they're too similar, though. Like they just want to sort of drop deep and dictate play. Can you play with two players that do that sort of thing? Or?
Yeah, because when Carrick first came to club, Scholes played a bit more advanced, didn't he? So he wasn't kind of in his area of the pitch. I can see what he's saying there, but I've not noticed. I've not noticed anything blindingly obvious. about the way
I don't think he'd be intimidated by them. I don't think he'd be intimidated by scores, though. I mean, Michael Carrick's came here and won enough trophies, and he's a good enough player in his own right as well, so I can't see him being intimidated. If that was the case, then I think any player that came at the club would be intimidated by the likes of, when you have Giggs, Neville, even Van der Sar, players like that, who have been at the top of their game for like 20-odd years. So I can't see where you're coming from on that one.
Yeah, interesting point. And maybe it's just, like I say, with the fact that they play a similar game, and it just doesn't work when you've got two players that are looking to spray passes about from a sort of deep lying position. No? Well, we'll move on then to player and cabbage of the week then. Dan, who'd be your player of the week to start with?
I'm going to go with Anderson. I thought he was all right against Arsenal. And obviously, scoring two goals against Schalke, I thought he did very well.
Not Gibson? Surprise?
No, not Gibson.
The Irish Iniesta.
Oh, no.
Anyway, I'm going to give second nomination for Anderson. I think Dov, the two goals, like you say, and yeah, he just sort of ran the game from central midfield. So against Schalke,
special mention to Berbatov in the Schalke game, because I mean, when he squared it for Anderson, he could have quite easily had a shot himself, but he laid it on the plate for his mate. I think that was quite good.
You might have missed a bit of skill as well, Dan. I don't know where you were.
No, I didn't. No. I saw that in the top. Brilliant. He could have gone down there as well.
Yeah, there was contact. So. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that was brilliant when he turned it. It was good stuff. I didn't miss that.
Duff, who's it going to be?
Dorshey, captaining the Manchester United team in the Champions League semi-final. Brilliant, what a moment. So he's getting player of the week for me. Maybe not the best performances of his career, but I mean, sets such high standards, it's difficult to reach those every week. So yeah, he's going to get it for me. A bit of favouritism maybe, but... he captained the team, and I quite like John O'Shea. Just he should be the captain all the time. Get rid of this Vidic guy. Who does he think he is?
Oh dear, controversial. What about Cabbage then? I'll start for a change, shall I? For me, it's between Vidic and Park, and that's just for the Arsenal game. Obviously, sloppy from Park, not picking up Ramsey for the goal, and Vidic is, Dov said earlier, just clumsy really with the handball incident. And also, I think it was Vidic who gave the ball away initially for the Ramsey goal. Sort of, I think he just hacked it clear rather than trying to play a short pass. Maybe I'll watch a replay later and find that's completely not happened. So I apologise now if that is the case. But yeah, I'm gonna give it to Vidic for the clumsy nature of the handball. And like Dan said as well earlier, I mean, he's risking like the last three games of the season, and the Chelsea game is pretty much all or nothing. It's the biggest game of the season, and to have missed it over something like that would have just been crazy. So luckily it wasn't spotted at the time. Dan, who's your cabbage this week?
Not for the not tracking Ramsey, but I think Park, because I just don't think he had much of an influence on the game against Arsenal. So he's obviously had better games, and he's not a terrible player. It's just thought I didn't think he had a brilliant game.
Do you think it's had any bearing on whether he'll start in the final or whether he'll start against Chelsea on Sunday?
No, I think he'll start against Chelsea, I'd imagine.
What, you think in place of Nani, maybe on the wing?
See, it's difficult because, like, do you want to go out and attack Chelsea and get the first goal and make it hard for them, or do we want to sit back and invite them on? Because, I mean, in the second leg of the Champions League, Chelsea, the first 10 minutes, 10, 15 minutes, they're all over us. You know, and if they'd have scored a goal in that point, we'd have been struggling. Personally, I'd rather get Nani on the ball and Valencia and everything and go at them. But I don't think Fergie will do that. I think he'll be a bit more conservative and not try and lose.
Dov, who's your cabbage for this week?
Same as you, Steve Vidic, for utter stupidity that could have cost us the title. And I think we got a bit lucky with it, I would say. Really, I start, even though you said about the camera angles earlier on, I just can't see how a linesman can miss a guy sticking his arm out like that to tap the ball. It fails me, it does, but yeah, for risking a title, the Village is getting it.
Fair enough. Reserves review time then, Dov. We've had a reserve game this evening, I believe, against Liverpool. I have no idea of the outcome of it, so I'm hoping you might be able to help out.
Yeah, Steve, that's right. The reserves are playing tonight at Anfield against Liverpool reserves. and managed to get away with a 2-2 draw, which is quite impressive when you consider the strength of the Liverpool reserve side. Christian Poulsen was there, David Ingall, Joe Cole, Danny Wilson, John Joe Shelby. So obviously players that have got quite a lot of experience in the Premier League as well. So good to see the youngsters getting away with a draw on that one. And even better, we took the lead. It was on the 18th minute. Marnik Vermeil, he's cut back, got into the box, cut back for Nicky Adjose, who side-footed the ball past the Liverpool keeper, Chamberlain. Liverpool kind of threatened a little bit. David Ingo had a couple of chances, but Scotland did well to shepherd him. But then John Joe Shelby, he got the leveller just after the half hour. It was teed up by Joe Cole and so smashed the ball. It was maybe 25, 30 yards outside the box, and Ben Amos and then go really couldn't do too much about it. After the break, it was a bit scrappy. Then, just as the game looked like it was going to head towards a draw, 84th minute, John Joe Shelby again. He fed Suso, the Liverpool player who found Joe Cole in the box. His shot then deflected off Saric. A slight deflection, and he got so what looked to be the winner for Liverpool. But then, 87 minutes, never beaten. Oliver Norwood, he had a free kick, hit the woodwork. Dan, there you go, hit the woodwork, and fell into the path of Gabriel Obertan, who sort of tapped the ball in. So, a nice 2-2 draw there, but wasn't the most entertaining game, I'll be honest with you, but. Couple of decent performances from the guys, and Josh King I thought was pretty good, and Gabriel Obertan had a decent game as well, but I think maybe John Joe Shelby would probably be man of the match for that one, which not too good to see. There was also a game for the academy side. They played Barnsley on the 30th of April, so a wee while ago, and managed to get a 1-0 win. And it was, guess who scored, Steve?
There's only one person, isn't there? Will Keane.
He did. Only goal of the game. Got it on the 49th minute. Sam Parson, he had a cross shot, hit the bar for Barnsley. And then United, in true customary fashion, straight up the other end of the park. And then Will Keane, he managed to put the ball through the Barnsley keeper's legs to get that winning goal. Johnson in the goal managed to pull it forward, which is quite a remarkable double save from Enrico Sosa, when it looked like Barnsley were going to score, but Johnson was up to the task.
You're listening to the redcafe.net podcast. You can email us at podcast@redcafe.net, or alternatively, post your opinion on the redcafe.net forums.
So everybody, it is opposition fan time on the redcafe.net podcast, as usual. And, as usual again, we've got Dave Chidgey on the line, who is seeming to be a bit of a regular on the redcafe.net podcast. Dave, how are you doing?
I'm all right, my friend. How are you?
I'm, a bit more disappointed than you sound. A man in high spirits, I presume, after the weekend's games.
Yeah, it was, we've been, really quite reinvigored with the form that we've been showing the last month, I suppose, really. But, 25 points out of 27 says an awful lot. But a couple of things. We absolutely battered Tottenham last week. And if we hadn't come away with a win, it would have been incredibly unjust, even, allowing for the fact that we got two quite lucky goals. I'm pretty happy. So, I think after kind of the mid-season slump that we had, we're just all still really kind of delighted that we've got three games left and we still genuinely have a chance of squeaking the title. Not many would have believed that in November or December.
Well, I think when we spoke to you, the first time you kind of said that you had the potential to go on a run and you've done it. So you're maybe a bit of a clairvoyant maybe.
Yeah, well, I've my predictions of I was giving predictions to the Football Fancast show, their new show, and I said 3-1, we'd beat West Ham 3-1 and help send them down, and we'd beat Spurs 2-1. So I'm not doing badly.
Yeah, not bad at all. Well, we'll look ahead to the game then, because we kind of know lots of bits and pieces from speaking to you before, but
The big question, which I think every single media outlet that I've read, is Torres or Drogba or both. So, Dave, what do you think?
Well, look, right now, not both. Certainly not starting both. I just, you know, I mean, when we played against Spurs, we had Drogba out on the right and Torres going up through the middle. But I'm not saying it can't work, but I don't think it does work at the moment. You know, my feeling is that they occupy much the same position and it doesn't really do us any favours. But the other thing, I think, is that it doesn't really allow Frank to make the runs that he does. I don't know why it's prohibiting that, but that's how I see it. I absolutely want him to stick with what we know works, and that is playing three in the midfield, having Drogba up through the middle, you know, clashing the ball up to him. He holds it up, you know, works his body against other people to hold the ball up, allows Frank to come in and get on the end of things, and you've got a bit of width with Malouda, and I would say either Anelka, probably Anelka, actually, because although Kalou's done quite well recently, he never, ever seems to do well when he starts a game, where invariably he does do quite well when he comes on. So I would definitely start with Malouda, Drogba and Anelka. But, you know, it's always good to see, you know, Torres come on with 20 minutes, half an hour to go. And, you know, if you're in the defence and you've been beaten up by Didier Drogba for most of the match, to see somebody like Torres come in, you know, for the last 20 minutes, half an hour, I would have thought would be pretty galling. So that's how I would play it. But having said that, David, I don't really see who we play up front as being the key battle. I really don't.
So where would you see the key being then?
I think, as always, when it's you and us against each other, it's probably the midfield. And, you know, one player for us who's been playing exceptionally well recently, who, you know, quite often in the past hasn't impressed me that much, but it's Mikel. I mean, the last few weeks he's been our best player, but what he's doing finally is he's really giving the midfield and the whole team actually a lot more balance. And you know, he's really kind of coming into his own in that holding midfielder role. So, you know, winning, you know, breaking up play, winning the ball, passing it simply to somebody close to him and letting them get on with it. And that's allowing Frank to make those forward runs that we all know and love. And, you know, it's no coincidence that Frank's coming back into a lot of form, and that's coinciding with us generally coming into form. But I actually think it's Mikel who's holding it all together.
Interesting, certainly. There's been a lot of talk about the referee. Howard Webb got appointed, and I've heard rumblings of Chelsea fans being a little bit disgruntled given his apparent leanings towards Manchester United.
Well, we don't have a referee on Sunday. We just have 12 Man U players, mate.
Oh, terrible. See, this is what I'm talking about. Howard Webb's he's an official. He's a member of the FA. He's impartial. He's unbiased.
I'm not being any more rude than Fergie normally is about referees.
Oh, Fergie's allowed to. He's a knight of the realm.
You know, look, Howard Webb is, in my opinion, one of the best referees out there. But I'm afraid, you know, like so many referees who referee at Old Trafford, they do tend to get influenced by three things. One, you know, it's the biggest, kind of club ground in the country. So when the Man U fans occasionally make a noise, it makes a difference. Two, the number of players that crowd round the referees up there whenever there's any sort of sniff of a decision to be made. And three, whatever Fergie said before, and he's already been at it for the last week. Oh, you know, we're not going to get any decisions going for us. We never do against Chelsea. You know, it's basically always predetermined what he says to try and influence the referee. And I think invariably it has an effect. I mean, we have had some shocking decisions up at Old Trafford. I can't remember the referee now, probably Mike Dean. One of my most unfavourite. But when he sent, was it McKelly sent off, or was it Lampard? I can't remember. It was a ridiculous decision. So we've had it just as badly as you have. And I'm going to say this now because I know this is a Man United podcast. But all the bleating that I've heard from Man U fans recently about Drogba's offside goal last year, they all seem to conveniently forget Makeda handballing it into the net, and that didn't seem to go against you, did it? But, I mean, look, you know, I think there's a lot of it on both sides, to be really frank, mate. I mean, you know, we're doing our best to unsettle the situation. You're doing your best too. The bottom line is Howard Webb is still a fantastic referee, period, you know. And, frankly, they're not biased. We all know that, you know. They do the best that they can, and sometimes they get it wrong. But I think that there are those mitigating circumstances that go around it, which is the ones that I just highlighted.
Yeah, well, I think... given that there is all the hype about him having like what was all the leanings towards Man United and whatever else, do you think maybe that maybe have an effect the other way on his decisions? Do you think if, for example, a penalty decision comes along and it's maybe a bit iffy, a bit 50-50, a normal occasion he would give it, but do you think he would have to be 100%, everybody in the whole world is sure for it to be a penalty, something like that?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. It may make him a little bit more cautious, but you never know. I mean, you know, a lot of referees do love themselves a lot, so it could go the other way, that he's determined to make an impact on the game and make a big decision to say that he's not affected by it and I'm just going to make the decision anyway. So I think the bottom line is, A, we don't know what will happen. We don't know how it'll play out. But I suspect, like so many times, it'll boil down to an iffy decision here or there. They nearly always do. Last year did. You could argue that there were several in the Champions League games. You know, there are always, in every big game in the Premier League and Champions League, you know, most of these games are defined by you know, a decision which could be contested, I think. You know, I think I'd like to think that that it does actually all even out over the season. And I think, you know, to be really honest, we saw a little bit of that last week against Spurs when, you know, we got a goal given that was very dubious, to say the least. And, you know, and quite possibly Kalou's was offside too, you know. So, you know, we won a game where on another day, if we hadn't had a bit of luck, we might not have done, you know.
Well, it's the title decider, essentially.
You know what, David? It isn't. And that's the thing. You know, it is not the title decider because we've both got another two games after that. You know, and what have you got? You've got Blackburn away and you've got Blackpool at home in the last game of the season. Now, on paper, that should be an absolute breeze for you lot. But having said that, you know, we've got Everton away and we've got Newcastle at home. Now, again, neither of those two matches are a walk in the park. What I would say, though, is that with my hand on my heart, I would rather be playing Everton away and Newcastle at home than I would be to be playing Blackburn away and Blackpool at home, because Everton and Newcastle don't really have anything to play for. They're absolutely in the middle of the table, so they're not in any relegation worries. They're also unlikely to get a sneak of a chance of getting into Europe. So they've not really got much to play for. And I'm quite happy to be playing them, whereas Blackburn and Blackpool are fighting like cats and dogs to avoid relegation. So, you know, for them, it could be a lot harder.
So essentially, it is a title decider, because I think the Blackburn away game will be quite difficult. I can see Blackpool at home being a bit easier, but I think with the, like you say, the two teams that you've got being kind of on their summer holidays, essentially, if you beat us, then
either way, you know, on paper for both of us, those games are easy. But on the other hand, you still got to go out and win them. So what I'm really trying to say in a very long-winded way is that, yeah, okay, you know, if we don't beat you on Sunday, our title hopes are over, and I absolutely accept that, really. But if we do win it, then we're level, and then it does all go down to those last two matches. So I think it's pushing it a little bit to say the title decider, but I can understand why people obviously are, you know. Mm-hmm. If we don't win it, we're out. If we do win it, then we're still in with a squeak.
And what of, looking at the game, the home form, the last time we lost the home in the league was against yourselves last season, unbeaten at home this season, dropped 2 points. What's the general feeling among Chelsea fans about the chances in the game? I mean, are you genuinely going up there? Do you think you can go up? Obviously, you're a Chelsea fan, you'll think you can go win, but...
We've always had a really good record at Old Trafford, as you well know. It's one match, you know, it's not over two legs like it was in Europe. We beat you up there last year. On paper, I think the teams are evenly matched, you know. So it's not as though one team's got the Indian sign over the other or is clearly the better side. I think another interesting thing is that it'll bear absolutely no relation to how it panned out in Europe, which was very interesting, actually. I mean, apart from the fact that I thought that we got it completely wrong tactically, and I thought Fergie did quite well, I also thought that Giggs and Rooney were brilliant across both legs. And actually, I thought Rooney's played the best I've seen him play for a long time in the Champions League against us. He was really pulling all the strings. And as I said, Giggs played well too. But the other thing I thought was very interesting was the way that Fergie grasped how to play in Europe in terms of playing the referee. So, you know, as soon as anybody got near a United player, they were on the ground breaking up the play, getting free kicks all the time. And I thought we were a bit stupid tactically and a little bit naive in falling for that every time. But this will be different. This is the Premier League, you know, and it's boiled down to a one-off match, and either team could win it, you know. I think ultimately, mate, it'll depend on who turns up on the day and who wants it most.
I'd be tempted to agree. So, Dave, before I let you go, prediction?
Well, you know, look, mate, I have absolutely no idea who does. It's a real kind of one-off match. But, you know, in my heart of hearts, I still believe we can do it. I would love the story of us beating you and then going on to win the title because it's so against the odds. And the other thing I like is the fact that, as I said, for the last few weeks, I've seen that kind of never say die attitude return to Chelsea, and it's really, really nice to see. So in the wholehearted spirit of the Chelsea fancast and what we've been saying for the last couple of months, I believe. So I'm going to go for another 2-1 win.
Oh, yeah, I hope that prediction does not come true. Surprisingly enough, you surprised me, David. Yeah, I tend to do that. But
what's your prediction, mate?
I think it'll be a draw.
You really think it's going to be a draw? That's I can understand the thinking behind that. I mean, they could cancel each other out.
Well, there's been a lot of talk about sort of, like, United fans are generally looking at the home record and the way we've played at home. We're quite, I think, not too worried, but they're quite hopeful about it and quite positive. But I've just got, after that Arsenal game, when you have that feeling in your stomach, you think that this is going to all go wrong. And because you've came back, I think, 15 points behind you were at one point, and you've got it to back within one win and you're top of the league. So
a draw would suit you. If you draw it, then you've basically won the title. You've got to, for us to be able to win the title, you have to lose. So a draw would suit you, and I think that's a very interesting point you've made. The other thing is, who was the last team you lost to at home in the league?
It was you guys.
It was.
Yeah.
Think on that, my friend.
I'm not going to dwell on it for too long, otherwise I'll have a heart attack.
All right, mate. Well, look, as always, may the best team win as long as it's Chelsea.
Exactly. Thank you very much, Dave. Pleasure again.
Cheers, fella. I'll catch up with you soon, I hope. Take care, mate. Good luck.
Right then, well, we'll just finish off the show, guys, by briefly looking ahead to Sunday's game against Chelsea. Well, huge isn't really the word, is it? Dan, 3 points, as I mentioned earlier, 3 points behind they are. Goal difference level. I mean, is it winner takes all, do you think, if whoever comes out on top pretty much wins the title?
Definitely. I think, obviously, the level on points, goal difference is the same as well. I think if we win, I think we've virtually won the league because the confidence will carry us through against Blackburn and against Blackpool. But, you know, if we draw the game, then it means that we've still got to win against Blackburn away, which is not something we make a habit of. And obviously beat Blackpool at home. So it'll be tricky. And I think if Chelsea get any sort of result, I think they'll win their remaining two games as well. So, yeah, ideally we win the game and hopefully put it to bed. I can just see, I've got this funny thing, it was like the same time last year with Chelsea, wasn't it? And I know we'd just been knocked out by Bayern Munich, but the game against Chelsea, we didn't get going in the first half and they went a few goals up and then obviously Makeda scored late on. But Chelsea deserved to win last year and I can just see them coming to Old Trafford again. They're in decent form. I mean, they've not been playing brilliantly even though they've been winning games. I mean, I saw a bit of the West Ham game and I thought West Ham could have maybe got a few goals against them. They ended up winning 3-0. I saw, you know, the Spurs game at the weekend, two goals that were highly, highly dodgy, but, you know, they've gone in. So hopefully we're too good for them, but you can just see that they'll have that sort of mentality. You know, John Terry will be in there trying to G everybody up, and they'll have people like Drogba and Torres who want something to prove to United. So it could be tricky.
Do you think that Trink Ancelotti will go with both Drogba and Torres from the start?
I hope so. Well, I hope so because I don't think they play very well together. Touch wood. But I think if they play Drogba up front on his own, I think they're a lot more dangerous with Malouda on the left and Elk on the right. So it's a tough call. But we've got decisions to make as well about our starting lineup. You know, like you said before, do we play Parker, do we play Nani, or does Giggs come in?
Dov, how would you approach it? I mean, Dan's mentioned a couple of players there. Would you be looking to line up 4-4-2 and going for it? I mean, we've done it before against Chelsea and played very well with a 4-4-2 system in recent times. Mm-hmm. Or do you think the key will be to just try and make sure we keep them out and maybe snatch a goal on the counter? I suppose in front of your own fans at Old Trafford, you want to go for it, don't you?
Yeah, I don't think he'll set up too cautiously. I think he'll try and go for the same team that played them at home in the Champions League with Hernandez and Rooney up front. Because obviously both of them sort of been rested. Nani or Valencia. I think Valencia, after his performance against Schalke, shouldn't be dropped because he was fantastic. And maybe that's only a position for me where I think there'd be a lot of questions, but I think he'll go again, Giggs, Carrick and Park, because it worked really well, I thought, against Chelsea over the two games in the Champions League, and then first choice defensive lineup coming. I expect them to go for it because I don't think that's the kind of way we would generally approach things like that anyway. It's like you were talking about Arsenal, so if we needed to win that game, we would have won it. We need to win this game, we'll win it. For me, it's as simple as that. It's a bit worrying because Chelsea have got that chance, so obviously they will be motivated. Carlo Ancelotti's not going to need to say too much, and probably John Terry won't need to say too much either. So when it comes to the crunch, we need to do something more often than not, we generally do it. So,
do you think we'll end the season trophyless?
No.
Steve?
No, I don't. No, I think we'll win the Premier League, like you say. I think knowing we have to win to make sure it's secure against Chelsea, it's in our hands, and it's one of those crazy situations. It's in both teams' hands, really. I mean, if Chelsea win, they've pretty much won it, and if we win, we've won it. So it's amazing it's come to this, really. I mean, we were home and dry at one point, and a couple of dodgy results, and we've let them back in, really, but
I think it's amazing that, you know, to this computer generated fixture thing that has drawn up Chelsea United again at the end of the season.
Question. Are you suggesting there may be a bit of a fix in there, Dan?
I think to make it a little bit more exciting, I think there could allegedly be a bit of a fix going on there, but I don't know.
What of the goal difference, though? The goal difference, because obviously right now both teams are on 38, plus 38. Can you see us? Obviously, we've got Blackpool last day of the season.
Yeah, I can see it. The highest goal scorers win.
Yeah, last day of the season.
They've got Everton away last game of the season, and we've got Blackpool at home. But they've got Newcastle at home after us. You know, Newcastle aren't strangers to getting hammered away from home, so it's going to be. It's quite. If I was a neutral, I'd be buzzing over it, but. I hate watching United sometimes. It's just, I know I'm very grateful for the team and our support and everything, but it does you no good for your health, I don't think.
I'm going to give you credit on your predictions though, Dan, because you did predict long time ago that Chelsea are the biggest rivals. And
ago. 3 months ago I said that, and you all dismissed it, and they're the ones that I could just, you know what Chelsea like though, they can get on a run. You know, once they started to get the confidence up and started to start play well again, then they were going to go on a run. And they've had the easier fixtures, I think. And no game's easy, of course, but I think they've had the easier ones. They've had a few home games in a row as well.
And what about the appointment of Howard Webb? There's been a lot of talk about that, saying that a lot of Chelsea fans saying he's favourable to United and that he always gives us decisions.
But it could be another way, you know, of thinking, you know, well, I've given a few decisions to United, like, you know, in recent games or whatever, and he's only going to give something that's absolutely stonewall penalty, you know, because the Liverpool game that he refereed in the FA Cup, Berbatov went down. I thought it was a foul, but it was a soft penalty. They give it, you know, and I don't think, if John Terry did that to Berbatov on Sunday, I don't think he'd give a penalty.
I think he's one of these refs that judges every decision by its merit, really. That's...
No, I think he's a good referee. I don't, no problem with him, you know. They make mistakes, referees.
Yeah, I think it's a bit... silly, really. Any of the sort of Chelsea fans or neutrals are suggesting that we've got the advantage because we've got Webb, and I hope it doesn't come down to that at the end either. If we win legitimately and it comes down to maybe a stonewall penalty,
I would love it if we get a goal that's 10 yards offside or something. Because last year, come on, we had Drogba at least three yards offside, and it was the most blatant offside you could ever see. It was there in front of you, everyone could see it apart from the linesman. And the linesman's in line with it. I don't get it. It's not like the ball was coming from, like, Ashley Cole left back and he was offside. It was literally 10 yards away from me. You could see everything.
So, predictions then, guys?
I think that it will be 2-2.
Dov, how do you see it going?
I'm going to sit on the fence as well. I'm going to go 1-1.
Oh, no confidence.
Well, I actually think Chelsea are going the lead. And I think that we'll peg them back, which means that then we'll have more optimism going into the final two games than what Chelsea have.
There you go. There had to be something positive about it. Good stuff.
I love it.
It's not the worst result. It's not the worst result at all.
Hey?
I was saying, it's not the worst result, a draw against Chelsea.
It's not bad.
Our hands.
I'm just being honest. I mean, obviously, I want us to win.
Fair enough.
Pride's at stake with these predictions, so I'm going to go with what I'm in my head.
I want a winning streak, Dan. But if you were here last week, you would have heard that.
All right, well, I'm going to go 2-1 United. Hopefully, we'll pick up the win. But, yeah, we'll watch with anticipation, I'm sure. And, well, that's just about now the end of episode 80 of the RedCafe.net podcast. The Facebook group, as I always point you to every week, I'm going to do the same again. And there's the email address, which is podcast@redcafe.net. Please get in touch with any questions, comments, suggestions, anything at all on your mind. We'll get back to you on that. And we'll be back again next week to hopefully look back on, well, the title being wrapped up.